Hello everyone. I'd like to welcome you to our session, Blurred Lines, Responsible Food Marketing to Kids Through the Eyes of the Health, Public Health and the Business Sector. I'm really excited to introduce an amazing group of panelists today. We've got Tracy Fox, who's the President of Food Nutrition Policy Consultants. She has over 25 years of experience in child nutrition, school health, nutrition education, food labeling, marketing, policy, and advocacy. We have Margo Boutan at the end, who's the Director of Nutrition Policy for the Center of Science and the Public Interest. And she's coordinated and led efforts on a range of policy issues, including calorie labeling, reducing trans fat labeling on packaged foods, improving school foods, and reducing unhealthy food marketing to children. We have Mark Broadhurst, who's Director of Public Affairs and Government Relations for Mars Incorporated. And Mark leads the state and local government affairs and public policy across all business segments in the U.S. And we also have Julie Moreno, who's the manager of the Walt Disney Company Healthy Living Commitment. She's focused on helping create healthier generations through promoting nutritious foods to kids and engaging kids and families and making healthy living simple and fun. Before joining Disney, she was a policy advisor for the White House in the Obama administration and provided policy support to the First Lady's Let's Move initiative. And I'm Arianne Corbett. I'm a dietitian and nutrition policy consultant, and I have a company called Leading Health. That's my own policy company. I was one of the co-chairs, along with Tracy Fox, for the Healthy Eating Research Recommendations for Responsible Food Marketing to Children. And you'll learn more about that today, but I have no disclosures at this time. So as you know, food and beverage marketing is big business. Food and beverage companies spend over $9 billion a year to sell their products to us. And according to the Federal Trade Commission, $1.79 billion of those dollars are directed to children and teens. Our country's youth grow up in environments where food and beverage marketing is no longer limited to TV. They see marketing everywhere they go, all around them, in movies, online, through their mobile devices, through promotions, in schools and restaurants, with incentives, contests, and toys. And much of the marketing is for foods and beverages high in added sugar, saturated fat, and sodium, and low in fruits, vegetables, and whole grains. When we compare the amount spent on unhealthy food marketing to healthy food marketing, the difference is stark. In fact, 72% of the total food marketing dollars come from the three top categories. Those are quick service food restaurants, carbonated beverages, and breakfast cereals, and these three categories alone combine to spend $1.29 billion marketing to kids and teens. When we look at the expenditures by the types of marketing, you see that TV still has the lion's share. Digital and new media, that red piece of the pie, is a small but growing segment. Premiums, those are kind of the toys and things that come with fast food meals and other things, that's another huge piece. And at the top in that blue segment, you'll see that $150 million a year is spent in schools, and most of that, over 90%, is spent on carbonated and non-carbonated beverages. So following the Food and Trade Commission report, which detailed all the expenditures of food and beverage companies and marketing to kids, and an Institute of Medicine report outlining recommendations for marketing to children, much of the work in public health has focused on improving the nutrition standards around the foods and beverages marketed to kids. So improving that nutrition profile. How many grams of whole grain, or how much fruit or vegetables included, what the limits on sodium should be, those types of considerations. And as a result of those efforts and of industry self-regulation, we have seen improvements in the nutrition profile of the foods and beverages marketed to kids. We've seen reductions in trans fats and saturated fat and added sugar, and we've seen improvements in whole grains and other things. But what we want to present to you today are these responsible food marketing recommendations for responsible food marketing to children that was developed through an expert panel led by the Healthy Eating Research Center. And these recommendations take that work, that nutrition work, a step further to not only look at the products being marketed to kids, but the whole environment and the policies and the practices around the foods that are marketed to children. With our panelist Tracy Fox, under the leadership of Healthy Eating Research Director Mary Story, we pulled together a panel of 14 other experts in the fields of marketing, nutrition, health policy, communications, and deliberated over 14 months to develop what we feel is a comprehensive set of recommendations for what we consider responsible food marketing to children. Throughout that 14-month process, which it was supposed to be a 6-month process when we started, so it was quite a larger task than we expected, we looked at IOM recommendations, the Food Federal Trade Commission reports, we looked at published literature, gray literature, and harnessed a wealth of expertise from our range of panelists to develop a comprehensive set of recommendations. And our ultimate goal was to develop a document that could serve as a framework for future efforts for the food and beverage industry, media and entertainment companies, but a broader range of stakeholders, researchers, advocates, policymakers. My job today is the easy one of the panel, and basically I'm setting the stage for our panelists to describe these recommendations, to talk to you about the policy environment that surrounds marketing and what the advocacy efforts look like, and describe some of the efforts of both public health and industry as we work together and separately to change the look of the environment, the marketing environment that our kids live in today. And I honestly could go on with statistics and reports, but I think our amazing panelists are going to do a great job. So what I wanted to do was give you an idea, a taste, if you will, of what marketing looks like to little kids. When we were going through these deliberations, we realized it wasn't an easy task. And a lot of times, trying to define what marketing is child-oriented or child-targeted, we really just had to look at what the kids were experiencing and look at that marketing to have an idea of how we could describe it in words. And we needed to see those examples in everyday life. So to give you the lay of the land and the food marketing environment, I'm going to present you with a story of the marketing that my children see. I have a 5-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 1-year-old. So they're on the lower end of the spectrum, really, in terms of like targeted marketing dollars spent to their age group. But they're a really important group to consider when we think about protecting the health and building lifelong eating habits for our nation's youngest children. So they see marketing everywhere they are, everywhere they go. I mean, it surrounds us. And these are kids of a public health dietitian. So they, right, their fast food meals come with fruits and milk because I buy it that way. Our cabinet is filled with cereals that meet WIC sugar standards. And my 5-year-old there on the left knows that her cereal has to contain 6 grams or less of sugar. She'll tell you about it because we play a game in the grocery store. So these aren't typical kids. They eat fruits and vegetables. They eat low-fat milk, but they're still surrounded. And so just to give you an idea of the broad range of interactions that they experience on a daily basis, I'm going to give you some examples from our real life, pictures that I've taken with them. So they see talking bags of fast food during baseball games that they watch with their dad. These are a couple examples of a commercial that comes on every commercial during the baseball games. They have cartoon characters, encourage them to try new foods on company-based websites. Food and beverage ads pop up before their eyes on third-party websites that are just a few clicks away from web pages directed about their favorite preschool cartoon channels. A whole grain snack invites them to join the adventure through a storybook app adver game. And on the right, you can see the back of the packaging where you've got the iPad and join the adventure and lots of fun. And then here's the game that you download online and you can follow the mystery adventures of these characters. Their children's meals at restaurants come in buckets covered with their favorite movie characters. And the top of that bucket contains instructions so that even without being able to read, they know how to take the iPad and download a game and continue the fun. The foods they want feature the characters they love and know very well. We've got Anna and Elsa, their favorite, My Little Pony, Dora. These are all real foods in our lives. In child-oriented areas of amusement parks, colorful characters decorate the walls of snack shops that are filled with sugary beverages and treats. Child-sized clothing at the local big box stores can make them walking billboards for all kinds of different food and beverage messages. And even at school, they're rewarded with things like no uniform passes, so they don't have to wear their school uniform if they bring in box tops from different packaged food items. And this is my favorite. This is an actual assignment that my 4-year-old pre-K child brought home, and this is called environmental print. So they teach reading through exposure to brands and logos, and they call it environmental print, and they describe that as the print found in the world around us usually the first print a young child recognizes. So we were asked to bring in package labels, logos, cutouts from magazines, and they actually built a book that they use in their pre-reading curriculum because those are the things that kids recognize even at the age of four. So needless to say, we're surrounded. And my kids don't have cell phones. They don't download ringtones. They don't go on Facebook or social media. They have monitored access to TV and the internet. And their celebrities, their favorite celebrities, are still Disney princesses. And I know that as they grow, the pressure from outside influences will only grow stronger. But right now, they still live in a really small world, but they're still surrounded by marketing everywhere they go. Some companies use responsible marketing practices by setting nutrition standards around the foods and beverages that they market, by adding their characters and logos to fruits and vegetables and other healthy foods like these grapes, or even by pledging not to market to kids at all. But some companies aren't. We know that aggressive food and beverage marketing to children works, and that marketing of unhealthy products contributes to an environment that threatens their health. These healthy eating research recommendations were developed to guide responsible practices and policies, but it will take public health and industry working together to turn the tide. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Tracy Fox, who is going to provide us with some top-level findings of the healthy eating research recommendations and some strategies to strengthen food marketing policies and practices. Then Margot Wotan will talk to us about the policy environment and advocacy efforts around food marketing to children. And Mark Broadhurst and Julie Marina are going to help us understand the perspective of a food company and an entertainment company as they navigate their marketing commitments. And then we'll end the session with some discussion among our panelists and some questions from our audience. Thanks. Yeah.
Especially the kind of progress that we want to see in such a large group. So I think through our sort of industry relations efforts, we kind of continue to bang the drum. I think with our advocacy with government, we try to do the same. But I would actually turn it back on you just a little bit because I think, you know, that's where the pressure really matters for a lot of other companies. You know, some of our competitors, they might dislike what Mars is going to do, but that's not necessarily going to push them to do it. Maybe eventually over time, but I think the more that consumers and the public can kind of help out, I think there's more movement among some of our industry peers at least.
Reinforce, you know, a lot of times people think that it's impossible to get companies to change by just tweeting at them or writing letters, but it really does make a big difference. You know, with CFBAI, a lot of those companies, you know, Mars came in early, but a number of them only came in because there was a lot of outside pressure, and then the other eight that were added, a lot of those were due to letter writing campaigns or other efforts. And I think even just recently, you know, moms and advocacy groups together have gotten McDonald's, Dairy Queen, Burger King, and Wendy's to all drop soda from the kids menu. And so, you know, when there's a coordinated campaign and, you know, we ask you to send an email to Nickelodeon or to tweet at Chuck E. Cheese, it's really remarkable how that can work. You know, that it's oftentimes the only thing that does. When we hear from customers, when we hear from the outside, it really does make a difference.
It does. And just one other thing to build, just to, again, kind of give you some context and hopefully just to help spur some understanding. Mars is fortunate. We're, as I mentioned, we're a private business, and as a private business, we tend to take a long-term view of the world. But you know, the one thing you also have to recognize is there are a lot of companies who have built a business model on sort of the way things used to be, and it's not always easy to get them to kind of recreate a business model. Eventually, yes, but not overnight. And that's why I said, you know, sometimes it looks like it's just baby steps, but actually those baby steps, I think in our industry, are bigger than they appear. We need to keep taking those steps, but I don't know if that helps just to provide some perspective.
Yep.
I'd just like to add that Walt Disney Company, our work with Nutrition Guidelines and Healthy Living, it's the right thing for our brand. It's not part of the DNA and culture. And I think the more we can just share our story about the positive benefits and how we feel good and it's benefiting our brand, will help organically promote change.
All right. I think we can maybe take one more question. We're right at time. Go ahead.
Hi, my question is for Mark. A number of years ago, there was a study done asking children which characters they could most easily identify. Not one of the highest ones was Joe Campbell, the animated cigarette. This was an animated character being used by companies selling dolls. And to be a parallel there with the M&M characters, they're animated, and they're clearly not being used. They don't advertise kids, they don't advertise using the animated character as their logo. They're also featured in products, toys, and things that kid high standards that gas. Do you see a conflict there between your policies and the use of those characters?
Thank you for that question. Do we have time?
We are very close.
No, I was waiting for that question. We do not see a conflict, but I think that our policy has evolved. So, first of all, and I can tell you firsthand because I've seen some of the ads that do not appear. The M&M's character, I mean, when was the last time anybody saw an M&M's commercial on television? Very. Do you remember what time it was?
Evening.
5:10.
It was probably 9:10 on a channel that, or in a program that was very adult-oriented. The M&M's ads are very adult-oriented now. So I think if we had this conversation, you know, 15 or 20 years ago, it might be a lot different. Our characters appearing in ads right now are very, very adult-focused, and as I mentioned, some of them are a little too adult, and they don't make it to the air.
That'll be your video.
The other thing with our characters, so as many of you probably know, we have M&M's World in Times Square, New York City, which if you are a child under 12 in there alone, I think we have a bigger problem than just marketing to children. But that is very much a gatekeeper environment in our view and for our code. But we have made some changes where you know, some of those character bins that you referenced, they are no longer going to be placed in toy stores and other places that cater to or could possibly cater to children. So I think our policy on the use of our characters has evolved. And as I also mentioned in my comments, we do, one thing I actually failed to mention is we look at our marketing code every 3 years because we know that, you know, in this environment, within the industry, within the regulatory climate, things are constantly changing. And so on a three-year basis, we're always looking at our marketing code and we'll make tweaks here and there. So I'm not going to say, no, we're going to do away with the M&M's characters because I think they're iconic, they're a piece of Americana. But you won't find them on anything other than, you know, an M&M's package or in a very adult commercial. Aside from things that you can get at M&M's World.
Thank you, and we're right at the lunch hour, so we're going to close up. But thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you to our panelists. We really appreciate it.